It's April 12th. It must. It's Thursday, April 12th. I'm sorry. So I was confused for a minute. But Senator Pappas is going to start us off, and I will share with the committee that I've asked Senator Pappas in the past when she served on the Commerce Committee. She chaired the Liquor Subcommittee and did such a fine job that we've asked her back to carry the omnibus liquor bill. And she was just really excited to do that. And I know you have to be someplace. You have something else. But Senator Pappas, you have two bills before us, but I think it would be Senate File 1070 that would be the vehicle.
The vehicle.
Yes.
Okay. And Madam Chair, there is an A4 amendment.
Yes, and I think members should have that. It's a delete everything amendment. It'll put the bill in the shape that Senator Pappas would like. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Motion prevails. I wasn't voting no. I was calling for the no vote. Now I know why I don't usually do that. I confuse myself. So, Senator Pappas.
I forget to make one change, and that's on line 13.
Mm-hmm.
The 300 is supposed to be 310.
$310?
Yes.
310. Yeah.
Senator Prettner-Solon, would you move that?
I do, Madam Chair.
So, in fact, I didn't know who had the motion before. I did. Okay. Then Senator Prettner-Solon moves on line 1.13 to change $300 to $310. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, Senator Pappas, do we have it right now?
Much, Madam Chair. What we are doing is we're allowing cities to raise their off-sale liquor license fees. Those are liquor stores. These fees have not been raised in 22 years. And we did do quite a bump here, but the city had originally asked for the authority to just set their own fees, and this is kind of a compromise with that, so that we do have some surety in law. So there's some comfort to that for the liquor stores. But then we've also provided the opportunity for if a liquor store trains their employees in all the laws pertaining to the sale of alcohol and rules for ID checks and all the responsibilities, that they can have $100 off their fee. And then also I wanted to mention on line 15 and 16, we did raise the off-sale liquor license that counties or towns issue as well. So that's kind of the base bill. And the cities feel like this basically will meet their expenses that they have in terms of, like, they're not trying to get rich on this amount. They're just trying to pay for their expenses. And the city of St. Paul originally brought this to me. So Mr. Bob Kessler, who's the director of licensing and inspection, is here if anybody has any questions.
Does anyone have questions of Senator Pappas? Is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify for or against? I know I've seen material explaining the need, because I think that right now the cost to the, for example, the city is exceeding the amount of the fee, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct, Senator Pappas?
Mr. Kessler, did you want to? All right, Jen, come on. Jen O'Rourke is also here from the
okay.
League of Cities.
Welcome.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you very much. And briefly,
Can you tell us who you are?
I'm Bob Kessler, and I'm director of now, it's called the Department of Safety and Inspections, a new department bringing in together other functions as well as licensing and permits. First of all, I'd like to tell you that we have not raised our liquor license fees in the city of St. Paul for 10 years, and we're in the process of doing a study with a national consultant to give us the actual details and the dollars that are involved in enforcement. So we'd really appreciate the opportunity to be able to reflect a higher fee for this particular type of license. And we're very supportive of the addition of providing for alcohol awareness training and follow-up compliance checks that will be done by the license holder as an incentive. Rather than requiring them to do that, what we have found is when you provide them an incentive, they are able to reduce some of their license fees, that they're much more supportive of that requirement. They do a better job.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I also added a new provision in this legislation on line 11 and 12 for these basically are regional centers. We found that those cities do have more cost connected with issuing licenses, and so we used to have just the cities between under 10,000, and then we went to cities of the first class, and we're finding there's kind of this in-between class, so we created a new class here, and Ms. O'Rourke was very interested in us doing that.
Okay, and Senator Pappas, it might be lines
11
9 and 10, I think, on the amendment. Are you?
9 and 10.
We're talking about cities over 10,000 outside of the seven county.
Nine
yeah.
And 10.
Yes.
Right.
Ms. O'Rourke, did you wish to testify?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a lot to add. My name is Jen O'Rourke. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. And once this bill was first introduced, we put it out there a couple of different times to our members to get reaction. Because, as you know, it was more of a general bill at that time. And we heard from some regional centers that Senator Pappas was happy to address with this compromise language before you, and we support this as it goes forward.
Okay. Senator Pappas, did you also work, did you have, I assume you had some communication with retailers? Did you? No. Or?
Yes, and, you know, Madam Chair, they're reluctantly supportive. You know, they're never happy to have raised fees, but they, you know, also appreciated the idea that the fee would be slightly reduced if they did do the training. And so, you know, I don't think they're going to oppose.
And I'm going to ask, do you have anybody else to testify? Mr. Kessler, Ms. O'Rourke, thank you. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill? Is there anybody? Anyone? I see people looking quizzically at one another, but I'll take that as if there's nobody coming forward. That's fine. Do members have any questions? Senator Prettner-Solon.
Madam Chair, I don't. I'm just wondering what your intention is. Are you going to recommend this to pass, or do you lay it over?
Well, I need to ask Mr. Stang. We set it aside.
And then we'll just make motions to put other bills into it.
And then
we can't
we'll pass
it until the end of
right.
the process.
Do you need a motion on that?
Motion would be to incorporate the language into the bill?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, yes, Senator Prettner-Solon, do you want to ask us to do that? Senator Prettner-Solon moves that Senate File 1070 as amended be recommended for placement in the omnibus liquor bill. Any further discussion on that, members? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. So that we have your bill sitting here. Senator Pappas, and you have 2223.
2223, Madam Chair, is to a bill we've had before. I'm not quite sure why it never became law. But this would allow the state fair to offer strong beer. Right now, they're only allowed to offer 3-2 beer at the fair. My request, I wanted to include at least one Minnesota brewed malt liquor that would also be offered.
And is anyone here from
fair? Mr. Bagnoli, hello.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm wearing my state, I'm with McGrann Shea Law Firm representing the state fair today. It's come to the state fair's attention that it would be of a benefit to their vendors, who, as well as be able to provide more vendors opportunity to sell at the fair. There are a number of beer manufacturers, Summit being a real obvious one, that don't make 3-2 beer, that this would provide an opportunity for Minnesota brewers, as well as, frankly, make it easier for the current vendors to supply beer. We don't believe, the fair does not believe that it will increase any, lead to any increase in problems of security or overindulgence at the fair. They haven't had a problem before and don't anticipate one right now.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've not been on the committee. I've not asked this question before.
What's
the difference between 3-2 and strong beer?
I grew up calling it strong beer, as a matter of fact. And I think it's really beer every place else in the world except in Minnesota. Would that be accurate, Mr. Bagnoli? can you define the difference between 3-2 and...
I'm going to have to defer to a... A beer expert.
Yes. Welcome.
For the record, Todd Hill with Cook Hill Girard representing Miller Brewing Company.
One of the issues when you have 3.2 and strong beer is that they're actually measured differently. 3.2 is measured by weight, and it's 3.2% alcohol by weight, and strong beer is measured by volume. If you were to convert 3.2 beer to a volume measurement, I can take the example of Miller Lite's product. By volume, the alcohol content is actually roughly 4.0%, and our hard beer, our stronger beer's content is 4.1%. So there's really not a great difference between the two.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Senator Johnson.
And Madam Chair, and Mr. Baglia?
Yeah. Bagnoli.
What, then, are there going to be two different tappers, strong and weak, or...
Madam Chair, members of the Senate, Senator Johnson, I think it'll be all strong beer at the fair.
Okay. In our case, the beer that we'd like to be able to provide at the state fair is the Leinenkugel product, which we're not able to provide right now.
I'm sorry, I missed what?
The product we would like to be able to provide at the state fair is our Leinenkugel product, which we do not make a 3.2 version of.
With a slice of lemon, that's not bad. Senator Vandiver, did you have a question?
I do. Madam Chair, I'm just wondering, on the state, at other fairs, the state doesn't tell them if they can have strong or 3.2, do they, in the rest of the state, or is that?
You mean county fairs?
That county sort of fairs, thing, that, yes, Vandiver. Exactly. Do you know?
Mr. Bagnoli.
Madam Chair, Senator Vandiver, I don't know. I would look to Senate counsel. I don't believe there's anything in statute that.
I don't think there is either, Mr. Bagnoli. I think this is peculiar to the state fair.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions? Is there anybody else? Thank you, gentlemen. Is there anybody else who'd like to speak concerning Senate File 2223? The appropriate motion would be to recommend that Senate File 2223 be recommended to pass and incorporated into the Senate File 1070.
Yeah.
Is there? Senator Johnson makes that motion. Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then my understanding is you're going to continue building the omnibus liquor bill, and I'm going to go chair my committee.
Yes, you are, Senator Pappas, and we'll tell you what it is you're authoring when you're through.
Right.
But I'm trusting that you'll be really happy.
Whatever the committee decides.
Yes. Thank you. And Senator Bach and Senator Maud, your committee's after us in here.
In transportation, but you know, I will. Depending on how long
I know he has somebody from
yes.
Greater Minnesota, I think.
Should I? Got a handout, Madam Chair?
Yes. Get that
going. This sounds like it would be a fun committee for a ranger to sit on.
Senator Bach, this is fun for all of us. Yeah. Senate File 201, and it looks like there's an amendment. Is that?
It's the
an author's amendment that deletes Section 2.
Correct, Madam Chair.
We'll put this bill in the shape Senator Bach would like to discuss it. Senator Olson, would you?
I'll make that motion.
Move the A1 amendment. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. And so, Senator Bach, in a moment we'll get to the handout here.
Very good.
Right now we're doing the amendment. That's what's been handed out. Can you,
Madam Chair,
describe your bill?
Witness can do a much better job of this than I can, but just to kind of tell you about how we got here, this is clearly a constituent-driven bill. I have a constituent that lives up on the North Shore, and he will explain to you what he would like to do that is not currently allowed under current law. So, Madam Chair, with that, I think Ken can probably explain the bill to you, what he's proposing to do up at the North Shore at what is going to be his newly constructed facility, better than I can.
Great, thanks.
Welcome to our committee. Just identify yourself. And
thank you. My name is Ken Thiemann. I'm a sewer engineer up on the North Shore, and that is such a fun profession that I decided to follow up with a 16-year hobby. I make beer. My wife and I recently purchased 15 acres of land between the scenic highway and the main highway up there, just south of Two Harbors, north of Knife River. And I used to work over in the Netherlands, and while over there, I became a really big fan. I had been brewing for about 10 years prior to working there, and then I became a really big fan, even more, of Belgian-style ale. And what happens, the history of this beer is it's kind of a high-end beer. If you go to Belgium or Holland with dinner, similar to a champagne or a really nice dinner or an occasion, they'll serve to you in a 750-milliliter bottle that's corked most of the time in a basket with some things to eat, crackers or whatever. They'll serve to you a beer, and they treat it like champagne. And it's a really nice beer, really good stuff, and you're starting to see it in the beer markets. This is Belgian beer kind of a boom thing? You'll see it a lot of brew pubs and that. They'll serve a Belgian ales. Presently, what you can do is you can sell in a growler your beer here. One of the things about Belgian beer is fermentation in the bottle. If you really want to get that really good quality of Belgian beer taste, fermentation in the bottle is most times necessary. This is a growler. You might have seen these in brew pubs. It has a screw cap to it. These are great. They're really nice. 64 ounces, which 1,900 milliliters, somewhere in that ballpark. But what I want to do is be able to sell. We want to build a medieval kind of a timber frame and stucco brewery, a small-scale one, and be able to run it just like a winery with tasting on-site and have people then, if they want to, purchase a Belgian beer that's fermented in the bottle and sold corked or capped in a 750-milliliter American champagne bottle. And currently, I can't do that 64-ouncer because it has the screw cap on it, and I feel that every aspect of what I want, kind of shooting for, is the aesthetics of a winery, really nice, really high class. And I feel that also, in addition to being necessary for the type of fermentation that I'm doing with Belgian ale, that these bottles have a really nice aesthetic appeal to them, too. And it'll be nice for tourists and good for the North Shore.
Sir, can you spell your last name? I just didn't hear it.
It's Thiemann. It's T like in Thomas, H-I-E-M-A-N-N.
Mr. Thiemann. Maybe you said, I was distracted for a moment here, that you currently can sell the growler, am I correct?
Yeah.
So you can sell the growler.
Correct.
And that's 64 ounces.
Yeah.
Compare that to 750, is it milliliters?
750 milliliters, 1,900 milliliters in a growler, 64 ounces.
And
that's the conversion.
So it's
just over twice as much.
Okay. So,
Madam Chair, we'd like a smaller bottle, not a bigger one.
Yes, understanding.
One with a cork, not a cap. So that's really
okay,
kind of why we're
cork.
Here.
Okay, you did say cork. I thought for some reason.
Yeah, or you can, with an American champagne bottle such as this, this is by a brewery in Wisconsin, New Glarus. You can crown these, too. Being a cap in brewery
crown
terms.
Crown them means?
You can put a beer cap on them. Not a twist cap, but an actual cap.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Senator Buck. What's been the rationale behind limiting this in the past? I mean, why is it even necessary to have to bring a bill like this here?
Senator Olson, the liquor lobby is here, and I think they can. I think it's because they haven't wanted it allowed for some reason. But I think I don't know the history of it. But it seems to me if we're going to have a smaller size, then
why?
Because I think Senator Olson, Senator Byer, I mean, it got to do with competition and the ability of, because they're not liquor retailer. They're not, that isn't what they're in the business. They're in the business of producing. And so, but we have the micro breweries and that have come into existence in recent years, and slowly but surely people are doing, you know, their wineries and wanting to be able to have people have samples and that sort of thing on premises. And we let, I think, a microbrewery, I'm not sure if that's right, a restaurant that brews its own beer.
Madam Chair.
Is able to sell the growler, for example, now. But we had to pass a law, we had to change the law to allow that. And I know there are people in the audience that will speak to it. I don't know if there's opposition. Yes, Senator Metzen.
I think we're going to do this. I would
move that. Madam Chair, the President has great insight.
Does he have a bill in the tax committee? No, I'm teasing. you know, we've tended to,
we've
do
done
these,
some of these before.
In the past. So, and it's great to see the entrepreneurship, you know, that it's alive and well. And and when you started talking about wine, I got really excited talking about how classy wine is, and I agree with that.
I don't know if we have classy beer yet, but we're going to have it on the North Shore pretty soon.
Yes, it sounds like that, Senator Bach. It does. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to speak to this bill? Is there anyone representing the industry that... Yes, Mr. Bagnoli. Mr. Bagnoli is giving a... why don't you say something for the...
Joe Bagnoli, McGranche Law Firm, on behalf of the MLBA, this is a terrific bill and a wonderful committee.
Well, I'm going with Mr. Bagnoli.
Madam Chair.
Senator.
Go ahead.
I did move for...
Senator Metzen.
Inclusion in the omnibus.
Senator Metzen moves that Senate File 201 be recommended to pass and incorporated into Senate File 1070. You understood what we're doing. Here's Senator Bach.
And I'm sure there's never been an omnibus liquor bill on the floor that I haven't voted. It's always good. It's always good stuff in them. This clarity, this is pretty neat. I was explaining to Ken before that this is what many of us do here, is we take constituents have an issue, and the craft brewers up north didn't understand why he was here at the legislature, why their association wasn't doing it. We had a good discussion about how often legislators, a constituent comes to them, and this is much of what we do. And I did a couple yesterday, and it would be a good lesson for some of our civics classes about how some things get in statute.
Mr. Thiemann, I hope you feel that it was worth it. Yeah, I'm glad you came down. I really do appreciate seeing that. And I think we all did learn something, actually. I did not know that about Belgian beer.
Yep.
So is there any further discussion on the Metzen motion? Then all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. Senator Bach, Mr.
Thiemann,
thank you.
Thank you.
Mr.
Thank you
Bagnoli,
very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
And so, Senator Moi, Senate File 390. Senator Moi, is this more fun than judiciary, huh?
Well, Senator Scheid, I was sitting here, I was wondering why I'm not on your committee.
Yes.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. This is actually my first time before this committee.
Yes, it is.
And I hope it's pleasant because
we
I look forward to coming
it.
Back. Senate File 390 is a small exemption that I'm here to ask on behalf of my constituent who is here today. He is the owner of Maria's Cafe, which is located at 378 and 374 Maria Avenue on the east side of St. Paul. And as you know, Minnesota statute prohibits granting a beer or a wine license for businesses that are located within 1,500 feet of a state college or university, and the cafe is within 1,500 feet of Metro State University. So we're just here to ask for an exemption. We have a number of documentations, Metro State and the Dayton's Bluff Community Council, which is the community council in that area, are both supportive. My city council woman, council president, Kathy Lantry, is supportive. The community and students at Metro State are very appreciative because if this were to happen, the Maria's Cafe can reopen with an opportunity for a sandwich. We don't have restaurants like that in the area, and I think it would be a great asset to the community. So I ask for the committee to help us make this happen.
Are there any questions? You do have an amendment. It looks
yes. I have the A1 amendment. As I said earlier, it's a one building that's split, and it has two legal addresses. And the bill only lists the address, I believe, at 378. And the A1 amendment just says 378 through only lists 374, I guess. And so we want to do
both of those addresses, 374 and 378.
Yeah. Yes,
this is the A1 amendment, an author's amendment. There's no discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The chair's motion, I guess. I don't usually do that. I'm sorry. I'm really in a hurry today. But I want us to get through, and that seemed pretty technical. So is there any discussion, any questions? And we do list addresses in statute. We've done this before. It's pretty, I don't know, I wouldn't know if the word's common, but
it's your motion.
We have done it. Senator Vanderveer, do you have a question?
No, you had a motion to make.
You have a motion. Want to move?
Move the bill.
Senator Vanderveer moves that Senate File 390 be recommended to pass and incorporated into Senate File 1070, if that's fine with
question.
You.
And
Mr.
All right with me, Madam Chair.
Senator Moore, in your testimony, I was trying to understand which of the restrictions in terms of having a license, was it Metro State which was the issue?
Yes.
Because
1,500 feet.
Because as the bill is drafted, it's Subdivision 4, Paragraph A, Clause 3 of Section 348.412, and that is the state fairgrounds, the half mile from there. So I'm wondering if we got a technical issue on this bill we got to think about.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I don't think we're a half a mile from the state fairgrounds.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
No, I'm quite sure you're not.
The committee understands my intent and what the issue is. We are within, you know, that square footage of Metro State. I believe the bill was introduced last year, and I think we didn't. I don't know what happened that we didn't get the bill to go through, but if the committee would indulge me, if council could help make that correction, I would appreciate it.
Okay. Do members understand the issue? This needs to be put in another place, Mr. Stang? Is that what you're...
Well,
or at least another reference? Mm-hmm. It needs another reference.
Yes, I think what we need, I think we can fix it quick. Is it only the Metro State issue, or is there another issue?
It's only the Metro State issue,
okay.
Madam Chair.
And then I would suggest that instead of Paragraph A, Clause 3, would be Paragraph A, Clause 8.
So on line 1.6, we really just change the 3 to an 8. Am I correct?
That's correct.
So it remains paragraph A, but...
Yes.
I'd move that amendment, Madam Chair.
Yes. Senator Olson moves that on 1.6 we change clause that 3 to an 8. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Now we have, I think, a healthier bill here, Senator Moore. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak to this bill?
No.
Or he's got the order.
Anyone?
Set up.
So
you're winning.
On then was Senator Vanderveer's motion to incorporate this into Senate File 1070 for the discussion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Senator
Thank
Moore.
You, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you.
What about us? We voted once. What do you think,
Tim? You get all the credit now.
Yeah.
Sparks. Get your per diem today for taking that motion.
I think we'll do. Who did I see? I thought I saw Senator Tomasoni.
Is Anderson out now?
Anderson's out in the hall.
Is Senator Anderson? I think Senator Anderson is doing some work. Senator Tomasoni, did he escape?
I think I got a real easy one. If you
yeah, you and Senator Metzen does as well. Senator Metzen. On Senate File 1996. Because time is of the essence here today. And
I understand that. Madam Chair,
yes.
Members of the committee, Senate File 1996 is brought to me from the University of Minnesota. It allows, right now, they can only sell beer and alcoholic beverages at the Northrop Auditorium and the football stadium. This would allow them at special events to do things at other buildings on the campus, but the Board of Regents has to approve it. We've run this by Senator Pappas earlier, who chairs the Higher Education Committee, and I know she's still chair of the liquor subcommittee here. Or
no, she's not, Senator Metzen, but
okay.
She will be carrying the bill. So.
All right.
Yeah,
and
you've discussed
it's
it
fair
with
to
her.
Say it does... The Board of Regents do have to approve. It could be one of the ancillary buildings or any campus building that might have a special event. So that's what it does.
So in Senator Metz, it looks like it is just for events. It's not ongoing.
Yeah,
so
that's correct.
Do members have any questions? Did you have somebody want to have speak to that?
My name is Bill Donahue.
Yes, Mr. Donahue, welcome.
But what the bill does is it authorizes the Board of Regents to apply for permits for the sale of liquor.
And Commissioner.
This comes up because we have several buildings at which people would like to sell liquor. And
Commissioner
Pope, we want to not list them all in the statute, but simply to have the board be authorized to actually apply for
it. I forgot that important part of it, that they do have to apply. It's
and
just
it's to the
automatic.
Commissioner of Public Safety.
Yeah, right? That's correct.
And so in any case, you've been doing that.
For the other.
We have one permit so far. We have one for Northrop. We'll get one for the stadium once it gets built.
Okay. Mr. Donahue, thank you. Yes, welcome. Did you want to say anything?
No.
Are there questions for Senator Metzen? Is there anybody in the audience that wishes to speak to this for it or against it? It seems like it's something we've been doing right along. Then Senator Metzen moves that Senate File 1996 be recommended to pass and incorporated into Senate File 1070. Discussion, members. On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Donahue. Thank you, Senator Metzen. Did we get...
Was that quick enough?
Anybody else? I'm looking where you were sitting, Senator Tomasoni, and then you've been moving around, I think. Senator Tomasoni, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm becoming a regular here.
I know you like our committee now.
I always have liked this committee.
Nobody questioned it.
Madam Chair, committee members, Senate File 1656 is about farm wineries and allowing them to operate a restaurant on the site of the winery. Currently, what they can do is they can actually sell their wines, and they can offer tastes of their wines on their winery, and they can actually put out some cheese and crackers and stuff like that, but they can't sell food. And so this just allows them to act as a restaurant on their winery site. So that's what it's about. It kind of reminds me, Madam Chair, of when I was in another life, and I was living over in the foothills of Italy, and we would go up into the mountains in the fall of the year when the new wine was coming out, and we'd go from farmhouse to farmhouse, and they had all kinds of food for you to eat, and testing the new wine and eating cheese and crackers and roasted chestnuts and apparently, we can't do that here because the law doesn't allow them to, because they can't serve food and charge for it on the winery site. So that's all this does is it allows them to do that.
Senator Tomasoni, that's wonderful.
Just the thought of it is very nice. Is there, Mr. Bagnoli, did you wish to speak to this?
Madam Chair, I Senator Tomasoni asked me to provide some help, but he's done a terrific job. I don't think there's anything more to add. That is what the bill does.
And so the bill will allow a restaurant to operate, and they obviously then would be able to serve, because it's a separate on-sale license, they'd be able to serve their wine. Would they be able to serve other wines as well?
They can already serve the wine. That's already legal. What they can't do right now is they can't sell food. And so this just allows them to act as a restaurant.
Okay, with being able to serve the wine that they already can sell, but they
correct.
Can sell
correct.
It as part of the restaurant.
And it's an on-winery thing. So,
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Tomasoni, is there specific codes in the area that they want to do this in, like so many restaurants? Or are they going to have to get a conditional use permit to sell food from their city?
I don't believe
Senator
so.
Tomasoni.
I don't believe so. And maybe council can help me with this. But it's just my understanding that right now that they can, on the winery site, they can sell the wine, they can have wine tastings, they can do all this different stuff. But if they want to serve some food while they're doing the wine tasting, they can't do it on the winery site. So I don't know if there's anything complicated about any of this. So
I don't think the restrictions
are generally on the number of restaurants, are they? Or this is actually a farm winery. So
it has to be right on the site.
There, it's not. Yes, Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, most cities do require conditional use permits to open a restaurant.
Madam Chair.
Well, Mr. Stang,
Chair,
maybe can help us.
That may be correct. I think Senator Tomazoni's bill is intended to address the problem in the liquor code that a farm winery under law is really limited in what it can sell. They'll certainly have to comply with any other rules and regulations of local government on the restaurant and so forth. But this corrects a problem in the liquor code about what a farm winery can sell on its premises.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Johnson.
And I just was trying to make it clear to Senator Tomazoni.
I see. That they may have other, they would have other requirements. Yeah.
I think it's very clear.
Yeah. And he assures us he understands that. So, is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak to this bill, to Senate File 1656? Anybody else? Is there any further discussion, members, on the Prettner-Solon motion, perhaps?
Sure.
Senate File 1656 be recommended to pass and incorporated into Senate File 1070. That's acceptable to you, Senator Tomazoni.
That's wonderful, Madam Chair.
We love your descriptive presentation. And we're counting on it when the whole bill comes up before the court.
Everybody should try it once. It's really a lot of fun.
Any further discussion on this motion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Division.
Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Senator Tomazoni, we enjoyed that. Thank you.
Was it a good presentation?
Yes, it was. He described the hills of Italy, Senator Metzen. Senator Anderson.
Thank you very much.
At our committee. Senator Anderson was a loyal member of the Commerce Committee for
years.
A long time
nice
and chaired it.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. So good to see your smiling face here, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Haven't been back this year, I don't believe.
No, this is it.
So I have a bill which would, once and for all, we think, repeal some very archaic provisions about St. Paul liquor laws. And we had some extensive conversations just now with a constituent, and so I want to explain about the issues related to this bill. But let me first explain how the bill would work. And simply, we have these two provisions that nobody really knows how long ago were put into law.
Senator Anderson, you need this bill. You need the delete everything amendment.
I need
the
delete everything.
We're going to be discussing that.
The A1.
Senator Prettner-Solon would move the adoption of the A1 amendment to put this bill in the appropriate shape for discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
Thank you,
Madam
Chair. And as you see on the delete all amendment, there's two provisions that relate, one to the state fairgrounds and one to the St. Paul campus called the College of Agriculture at the University of Minnesota, both of which are well known where they are, and both in my district, where there were old provisions put into law that limited sales of liquor within, I think, a half mile of either of those locations for reasons kind of that were historical. And over the years, there's been a couple of exceptions made to these laws, one for the wonderful little restaurant Muffaletta on Como Avenue to be able to sell alcohol or wine with dinner and lunch,
that's
I
good,
suppose,
Senator.
But dinner at least. And then last year, I did a bill with your help, Madam Chair, to do an exemption for a little wine shop, which is called the Little Wine Shop, in the St. Anthony Park neighborhood as well. And this bill was brought to my attention earlier this session as a request from a neighborhood establishment, a small coffee shop that's in the Midway area that's open now, that's right in the middle of a residential neighborhood. And I just want to mention that there's a very vigorous debate going on in that neighborhood whether they should be allowed to sell wine at that coffee shop. It's a wonderful little place. And I decided, rather than get into the middle of that discussion, it sort of reinforced my point of view that this is something that really should be a locally decided issue, rather than having a piecemeal approach where legislators from St. Paul would come and ask for permission from state legislators from all across the state to have a liquor license somewhere in St. Paul. So it seems I strongly support the idea of repealing the law and letting the city and the residents of the neighborhoods make those decisions, as they do in probably everywhere else in the state of Minnesota. And so I just want to be very clear for the record that there is, there's been a lot of local debate about it. There's a zoning decision that would have to be made. There's not even been an application. So this bill is not intended to affect any particular establishment. This is intended to repeal an obsolete law and to return control to the local level where it belongs. And I guess I would say that it's not intended in any way, shape, or form to affect the local decision about a particular establishment or any applications that may or may not be brought for a liquor license in the future. I don't want it to affect that decision. And I've committed to supporting the neighborhood process and the city process to determine whether any future liquor licenses should be granted.
So, Senator Anderson, do I understand that the original language of the bill would have allowed that specific location?
That's right.
And this, instead of telling the city that they should issue a license in that place, you're just removing the language that would preclude them from doing it if they in those two places near the fairgrounds or
The St. Paul campus. That's exactly correct. And then we wouldn't be coming back in the future to have these conversations. Rather, it would be decided within the confines of the city of St. Paul.
And knowing how this committee does love these conversations, nevertheless, I think I understand exactly, and I think that that's a good example probably for all of us to follow in looking at these situations as they come to us one by one. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't know St. Paul was different. This is enlightening. But, Senator...
They are different. Yes.
Madam Chair, how is this going to affect Senator Ma's bill?
Mr. Stain.
Madam Chair, I think in effect it will make it unnecessary, right. But I don't see any reason not to keep it in the bill for now, because who knows at the end of the day what's in the final bill.
Okay.
Which campus? Oh, Madam Chair, yes, her Senator bill Anderson. Relates to something on the east side of St. Paul and
right.
a different campus.
Right.
Metro State.
It doesn't affect this area at all.
Right.
And this,
right.
these provisions would not affect.
Senator Pappas is Metro State. She's that little Maria's place. I think it's 374, 378.
Where's that one?
Maria Avenue.
On the east side.
On the east side.
Yeah.
Well, that's Mariah.
Is it Mariah?
Mariah.
Mariah.
Is
right.
the colloquial expression.
Senator Ma's bill originally did have a reference to the state fair,
right.
And so we've taken care of that, so we won't bother you with that. Senator Olson,
I'll be happy to move the bill for inclusion.
Senator Olson moves that Senate File 723, as amended, be recommended to pass, and it would be incorporated into Senator Pappas's Senate File 1070. Senator Anderson, if that's okay with you.
And yes.
And it seems to be okay with her. She doesn't know what package quite she's getting yet, but I think the committee's at least listening to everything here carefully.
Madam Chair, yeah, I believe it's important to have the committee process to help recommend what the bill turns out to be. And I would just want to say again for the record, this has been an opportunity before while you were waiting for us to have a good discussion and to have some commitments made about involvement in the city processes, and I know that Senator Pappas will be very willing to work with us and to make sure those are the commitments that have been made will be taken care of before she brings the bill up on the Senate floor. So that's what I will ask her to do, and I have full confidence that will work out.
Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak to this bill? Any comments from anybody? I see none on the Olson motion then. No further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion
thank
prevails.
You.
Senator
very
Anderson,
much.
Thank you.
Madam
thank
Chair,
you
Madam
for doing that work.
Thank you.
Good work. So then we have Senator Sparks. Now we are, do we have any more? 1867. Yes, silent auctions, alcohol sales authorization.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 1867 is a pretty simple bill. Before we get moving, though, I do have the A1 author's amendment that I'd like to offer.
Senator Sparks. On the A1 amendment that I don't think anybody has it yet. It's going to put it in the shape he needs it.
Okay.
Senator Sparks moves the A1 amendment, an author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And this is a bill that would allow silent auctions, I'm sure many of you have attended, to offer alcohol to be raffled off. I've attended Pheasants Forever, Ducks Unlimited banquets, and some charity fundraisers for our local Catholic schools. And so that's basically what this bill would allow those folks to do. Mr. Bagnoli is with me.
Mr. Bagnoli, can you enlighten us on this, why we need to, since we've been doing this right along, what's the issue?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Joe Bagnoli, Grand Shea Law Firm. I like you, was under the impression that what occurs probably daily, certainly every weekend
every
in Minnesota,
weekend, yes,
has been illegal. So this now corrects that.
You're going to bother us with these details, aren't you? Yes, I think it's probably a good thing. Senator Sparks, let's see here.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Olson.
I guess I'm just wondering, since it seems as though everyone concedes that they didn't realize this wasn't legal before, that by enacting this legislation, while it may be necessary, it seems like a lot more limiting than what's been commonly occurring already.
In terms of the amount, you mean, of what
right.
can be...
Well, and I'm also thinking that the license fee could possibly exceed the cost of what you recoup from the sale. I mean, your... I assume this is one bottle or not to exceed five bottles or 1 liter of alcohol. That's not per person. That's total for the event, and you can only do this once a year. Is that correct? Is that the way it's written?
I was wondering the same thing, if it's about the one basket, you know, and you could have 10 baskets, or can you only have
right,
one?
Madam Chair. Yes. Is this per sale to each individual person, or is this per sale for the whole event, in which case it's very limited, and it seems like the liquor license would probably cost you more than you could recover?
Mr. Bagnoli, do you?
Madam Chair, Senator, this was not my bill. I don't know who the genesis or the person who thought that we needed to do this was, and or why it was set up that way at all. I know that the amendment was written to be more in line with the way temporary licenses that other charities, if you have a church function that the church serves wine at, they have to get a temporary license, and this mirrors that. But I don't know with respect to why five bottles or 24 bottle case. I don't know who's behind this or who thought this was something that needed to come to the attention of the legislature at all.
Senator Sparks, who brought?
Madam Chair, Senator Irving, Representative Broad brought this legislation to me. I think it was just because of that very fact. I think people were doing this, but currently I don't believe that when you do attend these Ducks Unlimited or Pheasants Forever banquets, it's not covered under law.
Sure.
Is it, Ms. Shelberg, are you interested? I know you'd be interested in the substance. Could you comment to us or maybe answer some of our questions? As I'm sure you're familiar with this activity.
Certainly.
Yes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Marlene Shelsberg, Assistant Director with the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division.
Could you spell your name for us one more time?
K-J-E-L-S-B-E-R-G.
K-J-E-L-S-B-E-R-G. There,
right.
Shelsberg. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Under current law, an establishment that does not have a liquor license or an organization that does not have a liquor license, can they directly or indirectly sell any alcoholic beverages? So if there would be some church or some other organization that wanted to have some type of event where they wanted to sell a few bottles of alcohol, they would not legally be able to do this. And if you were going to increase the amount that these organizations could sell, you might want to consider the requirement for liquor liability insurance. That's not included now on most temporary licenses, but it certainly would be advisable if someone is going to be allowed to sell that you take a look at that.
Thank you, Ms. Schelsberg. I
think that is Marlene.
I'm wondering, I mean, it seems to me, and I would have no way of knowing if the organizations where I've, the events I've attended, I mean, they've ranged all the way from a community college to a Chamber of Commerce event and other foundations where there's a silent auction and you bid, you know, you write down your bid for that basket maybe of several bottles of wine or even you know, distilled spirits. And I have no way of knowing if they had a license for that. I do know I've never seen anybody proceed then to start drinking it. I think it's usually something you pick up at the end of the evening, I think, and take home. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I've attended so many events back in my district where these are used just as part of, like, as was said, a Ducks Unlimited banquet. These don't just happen once a year. They happen, you know, at least four or five or six times a year. They're going for charitable purposes. If we enact this, we're going to be limiting them more, I think, by saying clearly they can't do it more often than this. And I just,
of course, they're limited right now by the fact that they're not supposed to do it at all if they don't have the license.
Well, yeah, then, and I guess I'm thinking maybe that's something we should address. I'm not doubting the witness, but I'm wondering if there isn't some latitude in the law right now, or perhaps it's, you know, that we would be more restricting more by passing this. But I just think that this is going to really make it difficult if we enact it the way
And Senator Olson, and I don't think that Senator Sparks intended to do that. I think he's intending to legitimize, and I think Ms. Schelsberg is pointing out, because she works with public safety, and how many years have you? I know she knows our liquor laws inside and out.
Madam Chair, around 24 years.
Yes. So I'm confident she knows whereof she speaks here. It looks like this might limit it more than you really wanted to do, Senator Sparks, just because it's not clear. Senator Metzen, do you have something?
First of all, somebody was talking about liability and dram insurance. This isn't, you're not drinking this stuff at these events. You're buying the bottles in a basket or something. You know, so it's not, I don't think we have to worry about that aspect. And I'm not so sure, Senator Sparks, we need limits. You know, these are church groups or charitable organizations. You know, not to exceed five bottles, but what the heck's the difference? So they, you know, if they sell a few more, I mean, I could care less. And I agree with Senator Olson. Then that line 1.9, let's take, first of all, I'd like to take out the five bottles and 24-bottle case and the not to exceed 1 liter. Later, I mean.
I'm thinking of, well, that's a good point, too, though.
Yeah, at 1.9, I mean, why, you know, why have the one occasion per year? You know? These are church groups or charitable organizations, and maybe the church has three that year. So what do we care?
Madam Chair.
I don't care.
Yes, Ms. Schelsberg.
Members of the committee, I would just like to bring out one piece of information that we have realized in our office lately. We have had some calls come through where people have been collectors of wine, where they have, over the years, have gone around the country or even the world and have it's been their hobby to collect wine. And they have accumulated quite a wine cellar. And they have asked us for permission to sell this entire quantity, either online or through some type of an auction or some type of a private sale. So this may be something that you would want to consider. We, not knowing, you know, the condition of this wine, what it kind of conditions, you know, that it has been subjected to, whether or not it's potable at this point. So these are some things that our office has faced.
So, and actually, is there any possibility for people to get a temporary license to do something special like that?
Not in what we're talking right about today.
Okay. Mr. Bagnoli.
Madam Chair and Senators, I just wanted to make sure you were looking at the Delete Everything Amendment.
Yes.
The delete everything amendment does not include a one per year.
It does.
Yes, it looks like it does on line 1.9, Mr. Bagnoli.
One occasion per year, Madam Chair, 1.9.
Senator Olson.
So, my apologies.
That's all right.
I thought we had taken.
We didn't.
Right.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I guess just to maybe I should just go back and let Senator Metzen finish, because the other thing that I'm concerned about is the license fee part of this. If this is going for charitable purposes, I think that's different than when you're actually selling. I can understand if you're serving the alcohol there why you would need a temporary license even when you are a charitable event. But when you have some bottles or something you're auctioning off for charitable purposes, I think it's contrary to the purpose if you have to pay for a license fee.
It'll do it right now.
I mean, most of these that I've seen really do involve small quantities, and they're not raising more than $100 maybe at an event. And if you have to go through the whole license fee, then that involves government having to spend their time, and they're going to have to charge a reasonable amount for that, and then it kind of defeats the purpose.
I see that Mr. Farrell stood. I really like his wisdom on this.
You do?
I think I might like his wisdom. Ms. Shelsberg, thank you. Stay close. Mr. Farrell, welcome.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Jim Farrell, Executive Director of the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association. From the political standpoint of this, I think the reason that you need to be careful here is that both on and off sale have to have dram shop insurance. So the desire here to make sure that a charity could perform this function but also stay outside the law is probably what you're looking for, and that's probably why there's some limitations to this. Otherwise, I'm not here advocating for dram shop insurance, but temporary licensees don't have to have it. And the problem with that becomes is a person can get drunk at a function and still harm someone, and there would be no liquor liability. In this instance, they could take this bottle home like they can at a liquor store, and some people are always looking for a deep pocket. So I think that it's probably fair to say that if you limit it to some degree, you are going to make sure that they don't have to carry that liability. And the politics of this, clearly, is you enter the realm of DWIs and people on either side of those issues. So I'd recommend to the committee whatever limit you would think is reasonable, but that's kind of why you're in this situation. Otherwise, you could just say to the individual, go ahead and get a temporary liquor license and then sell. So you're trying to find that reasonable balance, but at the same time, I'm just saying beware the politics of drunk driving comes into play in this.
Right. Senator Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not to confuse the issue anymore, but I was just recently at an event exactly what Ms. Shelsberg described, where it was a charitable function for a disease, and a person with a private cellar had donated hundreds of bottles. And they wrapped them in brown paper bags, and for $10 you bought a bottle, not knowing if you were getting a $10 bottle or a $150 bottle of wine. So there was a lot of things in play, but then I want to go to what he just said. It was housed in a restaurant that had a liquor license. So then were they responsible for?
Madam Chair and members, most likely, yes. It's called corkage, and most establishments would not waive it. So, yes, their liability would probably cover it. And so, you know, you might want to, for example, say that if you're going to raffle off more than a certain amount, you would want to be in an on-sale establishment or an off-sale establishment that has liquor liability.
Madam Chair.
Members, yes, Senator Metzen.
Well, I'm talking to Senator Prentner-Solon about, you know, when you have these things, sometimes you buy a whole wagon full of, you know, that's heck of it. And I've seen that. I'm sure we all have. And that's why that limiting to the five doesn't make any sense to me. And I personally give a little more credit to the organizations and the churches and the charitable groups. I mean, you know, they're not
they know what they're doing, too. And then by the time you get to booze at home, Representative Farrell, you have a couple drinks the next day and you go back to the church a month later and sue them. I don't know if that's going to...
Senator Sparks,
Madam Chair.
We need some work here, I think.
Madam Chair, that's fine. This certainly is not my re-election bill. I was just...
make it legal for
none of us up here.
I know we have a busy agenda. I don't want to sit here all day, so whatever the committee wants to do, that's
Sparks,
fine with me.
You know what, Senator Metzen, I'm going to suggest that we lay it over. I...
won't hurt my feelings.
And I think we need to...
Oh, Representative Broad, let her know.
Madam Chair,
I think it's an issue, and I think we need to be looking at it, and I'm sure these organizations, I mean, somebody, it's come to somebody's attention that they probably should have been doing this all along, but this language is really tough to start working with and craft it better right here and now. You know, I don't think it's out of the question. I think the committee understands it well enough that if you brought it to the floor, you could do that. That's maybe a little iffy, Senator Sparks, but certainly we could get to it next year. But I don't know. You kind of can.
Madam Chair, that's fine. Let's continue to work on this. I think we brought the point up. We'll do some more research and try to address some of your concerns.
Fine
if you'd like to.
And Senator Sparks, I suggest you do confer. Mr. Farrell has a lot of expertise in this. Certainly, Ms. Schelsberg does. With the agency, so I can encourage you to do that. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, I just think we ought to legalize something that's illegal today. And
that's a great line.
That'd be the quote.
There's a whole lot of people that feel that way about a whole lot.
Right, we got the press to cover this. But I don't know. I think some of us. Myself and Senator Olson and somebody else could probably in the next even hour kind of fool around with this thing and maybe do it yet today. Not tonight, not next week, but get it done because I think it's important.
Madam Chair,
Senator Olson.
I agree with Senator Metzen because it leaves me feeling uncomfortable that we're all recognizing there's something happening in the state that we all think is for a worthwhile cause and that we don't like to leave people wondering whether something is legal or not if we can do this easily and quickly.
Senator Olson, I think that's great, and I think Senator Sparks would like to see this pass. I mean, I think my sense from members' questions was we're not wanting to condemn these kind of events. We've all been to them, and we understand that they're for noble and worthy causes. So I would encourage you to do that. I do, however. Now, Senator Sparks, you have another bill some other place. You have two here.
I do have another bill, but we can stay here. Senator Tomasoni is presenting that one. There are some people from my community testifying. And,
okay.
Senator Pappas is
Senator Sparks, would you do – I'd like to leave 162 for the very end. I think we can do the next few bills in the next 15 minutes or so.
Certainly.
Do you
we
want
take
it?
The banking bill, Senate
yes.
File 1920?
Yes, I see Mr. Murphy's here. Senate File 1920.
We need a motion to lay this on the table?
We're going to lay the bill on the table. I don't know if I need a motion. Senator Sparks moves to lay Senate File 1867 on the table. We'll continue to work on it. We may bring it back. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Sparks. Mr. Bagnoli, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We'll switch gears a little bit now, and Senate File 1920 is the Department of Commerce's banking bill. And with me today is Deputy Commissioner Murphy. He'll walk you through the bill, Madam Chair.
Is it half as much fun, Mr. Murphy and Senator Sparks, as the last one?
We'll find out.
Mr. Murphy, hello.
Madam Chair, thank you. This is another terrific bill, Madam Chair.
Yes, from the department, yes.
This is our annual bill where we do maintenance on the financial institution laws. Generally pretty technical stuff here. I believe you have an excellent outline from counsel. Sections 1 and 2
yes,
deal
we
with...
Yes, we do.
Sections 1 and 2 deal with so-called payday loans. These are small denomination loans where the borrower gives the lender a post-dated check, and it's come to our attention in our examinations that the statutes permit the lender, in the event of a default, to get a judgment for the amount of the loan, for example, $350, and then if because it involves a post-dated check, they can get another judgment, so they end up with a judgment that's twice the amount of the loan, which we think is unreasonable, so we're putting a stop to that practice.
And so, so Mr. Murphy, what it's saying is that you can't levy. Let's see, it would have to do with the penalty, the civil penalty provisions. Is it because of the check, for a return check, an NSF check?
We're right, saying okay. That they cannot get a judgment for the amount
Thank
of the loan
you.
And the amount of a bad
Thank
check.
Thank you.
Thank you. See, the Section 3 of the bill and part of the repealer deal with electronic financial terminals, also known as ATM machines. This law was put in place many years ago before ATMs became popular. We have about 3,200 state-licensed ATMs in Minnesota. About 1,000 are operated by financial institutions. The other 2,200 or so are mostly convenience stores, gas stations, and the like. And we've come to the conclusion that banks and credit unions do not need to do a filing with the Commerce Department to install an ATM machine. So we're going to eliminate that burden for banks and credit unions to put in an ATM. Other entities would still have to go through the same licensing process that they do currently. Sections 4 and 5 are technical items dealing with the ability of banks and credit unions to offer health savings accounts and to clarify that those accounts can be transaction accounts. Section 6 is a technical change at clarifying that a bank can pledge a bond issued by a local government as collateral for the local government's deposit account.
Six.
A little bit like asking the chef to eat his own cooking. Section 7, we license these entities called credit service organizations, and the registration fee is $100. It's very obsolete. We spend a lot more time on those, so we're raising that fee up to $1,000. We're trying to just cover our costs in reviewing those filings. And part of the repealer deals with an obsolete cap on organizational fees associated with new banks that we are also deleting. And I believe there might be an amendment.
And there is, and it's an author's amendment. Oh. Senator Sparks moves the A1. This will add another section, and I see it's pretty simple.
Yes, Madam Chair,
we'll just adopt it.
Okay.
I think Senator Sparks, an author's amendment to add language to the bill. All those in favor of the A1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Senator Sparks, now you have that.
The amendment was brought to me by a local banker who was concerned with the amount of state charter banks are allowed to borrow 35% of their assets from the Federal Home Loan Bank. Current law just allows them to borrow 25%. I believe the department is comfortable with this language as well.
Mr. Murphy.
Madam Chair, the department is comfortable with the amendment.
That seems fine. It's pretty technical. I mean, I understand it's a greater amount of indebtedness, but that's fine.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Then, do we have anybody else to speak to the bill? The Bankers Association seems to think the bill is fine. Anyone else in the audience wish to testify? Are there any questions from members? Other questions? Then Senator Sparks moves that Senate File 1920 as amended be recommended to pass, and this will not go into the omnibus liquor bill. This will
good.
This will go on its own. Senator Sparks.
Thank you,
any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails.
What's from there?
It's from the other bill. 10
the fee.
Why did you say
something? I can't read it just yet. So, Mr. Murphy, thank you. Senator Sparks, you have Senate File 1936. And then if it's okay with you, I'll do 1429, and then we'll do your bill after that.
That's fine, Madam Chair.
Mr. Murphy, thank you.
Madam Chair, I do have a A1 amendment for this
Senate
bill
File 1936.
As well.
Did you bring a testifier?
No, I didn't. Yeah, he was in California. He couldn't make it. Bowser from Sha-na-na, but he sends his regards. He wanted to be here today.
I don't know if members saw him on the news testifying on this bill in the other body. What's his last name? Bowser.
I don't know. That's his stage name is Bowser. I don't know what his actual...
Shanana, anyway. Senator Sparks moves the A1 amendment to put this Senate File 1936 in the shape he would like it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 1936 is the Truth in Music legislation. This bill is in response to incidents where a promoter or musical group advertised an upcoming performance, but then when they show up for the concert, you are disappointed that none of the members of the group were actually in the production. This deceptive practice is often exercised against groups that have little face recognition and are more recognized by their sound. This bill would make it illegal for any person to advertise or conduct a live musical performance or production in Minnesota using false, deceptive, or misleading affiliation, connection, or association between a performing group or a record group. It's current law in several states, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Illinois, Michigan, Massachusetts, South Carolina, North Dakota, and is being considered in several other states as we speak. These performing groups are essentially committing identity theft by profiting from the names of famous groups while committing consumer fraud at the expense of concert goers. That's the bill, Madam Chair, and I'd stand for any questions.
Senator Sparks, I don't know if anybody else has seen the television commercial for the Rat Pack. And the guy, they say Sammy Davis Jr., and that guy looks a little bit like Sammy Davis Jr. And then they've got a guy that looks like Frank Sinatra, but they call him by, you know, Sammy Davis Jr. or Frank Sinatra. The guy that's supposed to look like Dean Martin doesn't at all. But I, you know, it doesn't look like him. But it was this deal with that. I mean, I don't think anywhere it says. I mean, I know that all three of those people are deceased, but
I don't know if it would deal with it.
But it did give me pause. I thought, what is going on here?
Right, Madam Chair. I think this would do is a lot of these like '80s bands that are now coming back. They'll use their name, but now this just requires that at least one of those members had to be a part of the original band, so they can't profit from the name of that group or organization.
Okay. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That answered my question, because I've seen a lot of times where they use the group name and there's one guitar player from the original band. But that's still, I think, disappointing.
I would agree, too. Yeah.
But this would allow that person to use the name. Do they have to send?
Except,
don't go see Chicago.
Yeah, don't go to REO. No. But Madam Chair and Senator Sparks, this still allows for them to use the name if there's one person.
That's right,
Senator Sparks.
That is correct. There has to be at least one person, because I think they're doing it where some of them don't have any members whatsoever.
And sometimes the members of that group are no longer with us. I mean, that... I was real interested in how they were going to do that. And
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Metzen.
My question is to Mr. Sparks. If the last bill wasn't your re-election bill, is this one?
He's getting mad.
Madam Chair and Senator Metzen, this was brought to me by your housemate, Representative Atkins, so maybe we can get you on here as an author of that.
Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak or sing to this? Well, they did sing in the House, and I felt kind of weird getting short shrift here. Then Senator Sparks...
Oh, Gerlach will sing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh,
Senator Gerlach.
Oh, Madam Chair, I just wanted to say that I see that in Section 1 we give the bill a short title, but I believe that we generally don't do that. We don't put the titles in statute of the various acts, that they speak for themselves. I think it's our general custom. So unless I'm wrong on that, I think that we should probably look at taking Section 1 out. So I'll make that motion.
Okay, and I'd just like to hear from Mr. Sting about...
Madam Chair, I know we usually strip or often the purpose statements out. Titles, I think I've seen that go both ways out of here.
They have, so I think it's a matter of if you...
It's the purpose one that we do.
If you...
Let's do it.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll make that motion. I mean, the bill's fine, it makes sense, but we tend to get carried away sometimes, I think, with things. Not that this necessarily does, but if that trend, we can get into sticky situations and such. So, Madam Chair, I would make a motion to delete Section 1 of the bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator Sparks.
I will accept that as a friendly amendment.
Okay. On the Gerlach motion to delete Section 1, which is lines 1.6 to 1.8. Any discussion by committee members? Senator Scobie.
Madam Chair, Mr. Stang still looks like he might have a question, so I'm wondering if we...
sometimes we don't.
Madam Chair, I think that's okay. I've seen more titling of bills. I think that's starting to happen a little more, but this short bill, I don't see an issue with taking off the title.
Okay.
All those in favor of the Gerlach motion say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. So, Senator Sparks moves that Senate File 1936 as amended be recommended to pass. I'm wondering, Senator Sparks, oh no, this was the other bill. I'm sorry. my question is too late. Is there any further discussion on this? Is there anybody, I think I may have asked, does anybody wish to testify on this bill? Seeing none. On the Sparks motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Senator Sparks, thank you. And if you don't mind to take the chair, and then we'll finish with yours. Thank you.
You're doing good.
Yeah. You can put that stuff in your brochure when you're running it.
I have an extra liability issue. What's the liability issue?
Thank you.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman and members, Senate File 1429. There is an amendment, but is it drafted to the Senate file, Mr. Stang?
The A1 amendment, counsel tells me, Madam Chair.
I'm looking at the language from the other body, and I one of the first things I want to do, because this is a bill today that members that today we moved from the Transportation Committee to here because it is an insurance issue, even though it's found in Section 221 of statute, which is motor carriers, I think it's called. Yes, motor carriers. And it's in an insurance provision. I mean, the language we're just about to adopt has to do with insurance required by certain motor carriers, and you'll hear about that in a moment. But I'd like to move that A1 amendment to put this bill in the shape we need to have it be to discuss.
On Senator Scheid's motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Scheid,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to ask Mr. Lehr from United Way if he would speak to the need for this. You can see what we're doing. It's exempting certain organizations from this insurance requirement, this particular, it's not really exempt from insurance. I'll let you explain how it works for you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Byron Lehr, and I work for Greater Twin Cities United Way. Many charities provide rides to their clients as part of their charitable mission. Senior citizens and people with disabilities are the primary beneficiaries of this service. Under current law, these charities are classified as for hire for insurance purposes. Senate File 1429 would remove the charities from the for hire classification and allow the marketplace to determine the appropriate insurance rates. Several states have already done this, North Carolina, Nebraska, Oregon, just to mention a couple. The North Carolina change was made in 1984, so we have 20 years plus of experience with the impact of making this kind of a change. The North Carolina experience was that rates go down for charities and there not have been any insurance issues as a result. We've worked with the Minnesota Insurance Federation in drafting this proposal and they do not have any opposition. Today's amendment is the result of conversations that we had with both state and federal officials to make sure that this change would not create any interstate commerce or highway enforcement issues. In fact, moving the language to .141 and referencing Minnesota Statute 65B came from those conversations. We're not aware of any opposition to the bill, and there is a representative from the Highway Patrol here.
Thank you, Mr. Laird.
And Mr. Chairman, and I know that I received some communication from the Highway Patrol, State Patrol, regarding this issue earlier, and I know that they worked with Mr. Laird and others, so I really appreciate Mr. Urquhart's coming here.
Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ken Urquhart. I'm the captain with the State Patrol. I serve as the commander of the Commercial Vehicle Enforcement Unit. Myself and my colleague at MnDOT, Ward Briggs, who is the director of MnDOT's Office of Commercial Vehicle Operations, met with Mr. Laird, and our concern originally was that the original bill would reclassify all those 501c folks that are in for hire business transporting passengers to private carrier status, which would cause them a great deal of problems, not only in our state, but with the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. So basically what we did is we worked with Mr. Laird to really meet his needs, and I think that's been done here. So unless you have any other questions, that's basically the history from our perspective.
Thank you, Mr. Urquhart.
And Mr. Chairman, I just really want to thank Captain Urquhart for coming over to tell you that. I mean, I could have given you my word, but I really appreciate that he did that. And thank you for working on it.
I think that is nice, too, because I know that they had addressed some concerns earlier, but I'm glad that we were able to work this out together. Members of the committee, any further questions for Senator Scheid? Seeing none, Senator Scheid moves that Senate file 1429 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you so much for coming over here.
Talk to you again, I'm sure.
Thank you. Thanks. For all your hard work. Members, Senator Sparks, we are now down, I think, to the last bill, except that we need to come back to the charitable packaging, you know, the...
And Madam Chair, I think we have an amendment
That'll be great.
That's being typed up because we had so many changes, so we can all look at it more clearly.
That's wonderful
that
we've been able to do that, and... I really appreciate members being here and really working hard on getting this done right. So then when we'll do Senator Sparks' bill now.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excuse
me just a moment. I'm sorry, Senator Sparks. And then we will take up the matter of the other bill of Senator Sparks, and then we will have to pass Senator Pappas' underlying Senate file to make all of that work. Okay. Senator Sparks, regarding Senate file 162,
thank you, Madam Chair. This is the call center bill. I do have the A1 amendment that would put the bill in the shape the author would prefer.
The A1 amendment. Thank you for the work you're doing. On the A1 amendment, which will put the bill in the shape Senator Sparks would like to discuss it, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Senator Sparks.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I know we're kind of short on time. This is a bill that we've heard a couple times in this committee, but there are some new members, so we certainly want them to have the opportunity to listen to this. It was passed off the floor in both 2005 and 2006. With me today, Madam Chair, is Tim Loveson with the Communication Workers of America. I'll let him explain the bill briefly.
And Mr. Loveson, welcome to the committee. I want to say that I think we would like to say probably about 5 to 10 minutes, so we should probably be out of here about 3:10. I know Senator Moore wouldn't mind us pushing ourselves a little closer to 3 because I think she's ready to go into the evening probably, and we won't have to if we stay. So that'll make her life a lot easier.
I'll be brief.
And so, Mr. Loveson, yeah, I think we'll do – I'd like to wrap up conversation about this by 2:30 if we could, Mr. Loveson.
That should be very easy, Madam Chair. My name is Tim Levison. I am with the president of the Communication Workers of America, Minnesota State Council. This is a bill that we had heard in the Senate last 2 years, passed out of this committee both times, and I hope to have it come out of the committee this year. We put it in the form of the bill that came out of the House. We went through three committees over in the House. There was extensive work done between the author, ourselves, and the business community. I think we probably haven't met all the concerns of the business community, but I think we've met quite a few of them. And our bill, Madam Chairman, committee, basically is only pertains currently now to would be residential consumers in Minnesota. And I believe they took the fraud part out of the bill also over in the House. Basically, what this bill does is if you call a call center or service center or are called by a call center or service center, you have the right to ask where they're located. And they're supposed to tell you. Basically, just tell you the truth. If you say, where are you located, they tell you. The reason is in the second part of the bill is that if you are going to present any kind of, if they ask for any kind of personal or financial information, you can ask to come back to the United States or to talk to a live person or a website if one is available. Both actions have to be acted upon by the consumer. The consumer has to ask both questions. So we think that this is very straightforward. You're going to hear possibly that there isn't technology to do that. I believe there is. If they have something available, if they have another call center available here in the United States, there is technology available to transfer that call. I can give you a for instance on that. Quest Communications has a DSL. I think you've all heard of DSL. On the weekends, our technicians were using when they were setting up a DSL for a lot of their for the customers that had services put in on the weekend, they dealt with a service center over in Malaysia that Quest had contracted with. What that call center would ask for is for identification of the customer was their last four numbers of their Social Security number. And our techs were concerned about that and did not want to know the customer's last four numbers of their Social Security number, did not want to get into that at all. They'd hand the phone to the customer and they'd have to deal with it. Since that time, and there was complaints about it, Quest has said that if the customer says, hey, I don't want to talk to somebody and give them my Social Security number, they transfer them back then to our call centers in either Salt Lake City or Boise, Idaho. So if they say that it can't be done, it can be done if they have facilities available here in the United States or a secure website. So from that standpoint, we think that meets it. Our concern is identity theft, and I know this committee has heard a lot about identity theft. I'm not going to say that this is going to cure all identity theft, but it's basically the consumer should be aware of who they are giving this information to. And if your identity is stolen over in a foreign country, it becomes very hard to get that identity back. There is no, our laws do not attack or are not being able to be used with people in foreign countries. So that's part of the concern here. It's for consumer awareness and for some consumer protection.
Members, Mr. Levison, thank you. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I guess if I were drafting this bill, and I'm sure that this has been an effort that's been an attempt, as these things always are, to compromise and to try to find something that everyone feels they can live with as much as possible. But having sat on the Judiciary Committee and just listened, or I guess in data practices last night, to how easy it is for someone to put together the entire Social Security number for a person once they have the last four numbers, if they have your last four numbers and know where you live, where you were born, if they have that information, and in Minnesota there are only a few common, if they know your age, they pretty much can only have a limited number of choices on the first three numbers. And then it's just a question of going from 1 to 100 to come up with the last two numbers, which is really easy to do. It doesn't take much to put back together someone's Social Security number and make that, if that's public information. At least in this country, we have laws that regulate how those Social Security numbers can be handled and used. But in other countries, we're putting that information totally subject to those countries' laws. So if I were drafting this law, I wouldn't have any problem with making it even a lot more restrictive. I would put the burden on the other company to tell you if they're calling from another company and asking for this information, that they're calling from another company and that the information...
Senator Olson, you're saying company or country?
Country.
Country, excuse me.
I'm sorry. I got confused.
Yeah, if they're calling from another country, I guess it would. I would say that that company should have a responsibility to tell you that they are calling from another country where the information you're giving is not subject to the protection of the laws of this country. But considering that that isn't, I mean, so I guess I just wanted to make that point that I think that this is something that I'm sure probably a lot of customers aren't aware to even know to ask this question and would probably be surprised to know that when a company they consider reputable in this country asks for this information, that it isn't necessarily going to be subject to the protection of the laws of this country.
But you're saying this bill doesn't really address...
Well, I guess what I... the long, long I've gotten a long way around to saying that I would certainly support the intent of this bill, and if it were, if that I would be happy to support it even if it went a lot further than it does.
I understand.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, I agree with a lot of what you said. I think the original bill was a little stricter, but I think in an effort to try to address some of the business community's issues, that we did have some comfort language. But I agree with you totally. I carried legislation last year dealing with identity theft, and I know how difficult it is, even if a person within our own state has their identity lost. So if it's overseas, it would make that obviously very difficult as well.
I'm going to turn over to Senator Prettner-Solin to chair, because I am going to offer an amendment at some point here. I just, when we first talked about this bill a few years ago, Mr. Levison, I haven't been recognized yet, Madam Chair.
Senator Schutz.
Yes. Mr. Levison, when we first talked about this a few years ago, it had to do with jobs and outsourcing, and I'm, you know, also concerned about those issues. And we talked about that, but it's now it's kind of evolved into the security of identifying information, and I understand that. I don't think that just because someone's in another country that that reputable American company is now less reputable. However, I understand that enforcement of the law or even the law itself is maybe different and difficult to pursue if there is a problem. I have to respect that. I don't think this addresses that as much as it should. So I'm concerned. I have a number of concerns, but I don't know if Senator Chaudhry has talked to any members of the committee or not, but his mother works for a company, a Minnesota company, a large corporation. She works in the call center. And you might suspect his mom has an accent. And in fact, I think she's from India, where there are some of these call centers. And she gets asked where she is, what country is she in. And when she says, I mean, she's an American, you know, an American citizen. She's here in this country, located physically here, but she has an accent, and she has people cursing at her, calling her a liar, saying some pretty, really awful things. And I'm thinking, well, then what's, you know, this bill isn't going to solve that issue. Maybe we still have, maybe there's some, and I know that communication workers, Mr. Levison and Senator Sparks, there is not a hint of any kind of racism in the purpose of this bill. I believe that because I know when we started talking about it, it had to do with outsourcing and concern for American jobs, a concern I think we all share. But I think that it feeds to this, and it does concern me. I certainly think you have the right. You don't need the law to tell you today that you can ask where somebody's located. You can ask that already. But to be really honest with you, Senator Sparks, I think it's possible concerning the original, I want to say the motivation for the bill had to do with jobs, we actually could cost some American jobs if a company decides they're just not going to offer services within the United States and take outsource all of their customer service. And then there would be nobody to refer back to. I mean, I think you could cost more jobs, which is, I know that that's not at all, you know, where you would like to see it head, and I certainly wouldn't like that either. So I'm going to offer an amendment which would take out of subdivision 2, parent B. So it would delete lines 21 to 27. It actually takes out the letter A on line 1.17 of the amendment. It's drafted to the delete everything amendment. It would take that piece out. I don't know if there's anybody here that would like to speak to that, and I know, Mr. Levison, you might. Is there anybody who, you know, I'm going to ask you, Madam Chair, if you would see if anybody.
Senator Scheid offers the A1 amendment, which, or, excuse me, the A2 amendment.
I'm sorry, yes.
Which deletes Section B from the A1 amendment that was adopted. Senator Sparks, do you wish to speak to that?
Madam Chair, this
Mr.
part.
Mr. Levison.
It's part under subsection 2B. Is that what you're taking out?
Yes. That is correct.
I'm not sure that really is, I can't see where that is a major problem. All we're saying is if it's available, that they can, come back to the United States. If a call center, say a foreign call center, is taking your credit card number because you want to make a hotel reservation or an airline reservation, and they have no place else, that's the only place you can do it, then that's what they say. We cannot send you back to the United States. This is the only call center that's available. Then that's the end of it. You either continue with your transaction or hang up. I'm not sure, but if they do have an option and you can, bring your business back to the United States, I would think that you would, that would be good customer service and you would feel better. And that's why we brought up the example of what Quest did, because their consumers were not comfortable giving out 4 digits of their Social Security number. When they came back to the United States, which was not a subcontract, it wasn't contracted, Salt Lake City and Boise are Quest employees. The people in Malaysia are subcontracted employees. And I don't think even Quest knew what they were being asked. And that's what we're saying is there was more control. The people here did not have to have that Social Security number for last 4 digits. They knew they had other ways of identifying it and said yes, and they could go ahead with it. But by taking that out, that takes away the option of a consumer of saying, do I have another alternative? And I think that's really the protection in the bill of protecting your identity. First, you find out where's my information going. That's the reason to ask. Now, if somebody has an accent here in the United States and they say, I'm in the United States. Now, we cannot control, even our people that work at the phone company have people that go nuts on them. I mean, that's part of customer service, unfortunately. That's part of the business. But if they are, here in the United States, they say, I'm in the United States. Here's the deal. We'll go from there. And but taking this out would take away that option from a Minnesota resident to say, I'd just as soon give my information to somebody here in the United States or a website if possible. If the business says, we don't have that option available to you, then you have to go ahead with your transaction with that individual that you're talking to on the phone.
Senator Scheid.
Madam Chair, I guess one other aspect of this is I'm the customer. I make a call. Let's say that it's 9 o'clock Central Daylight Time, and I make a call to a call center, and I get a response. I find out that they're in another country, and I ask to have that referred back to the United States, and then that the United States operation, if they have one,
mm-hmm.
that company offers the service in the United States, may not be open. And now I'm not feeling really good about the company, perhaps. I'm frustrated as a customer. I think that for... I don't want businesses to be in the position here of closing down existing American facilities because it is too troublesome. You know, I think I'm concerned for the overall ability of commerce to happen and to continue smoothly. And so I just think that adds a hitch. I don't know if there's anybody in the audience, Madam Chair, if you could ask if anybody would speak to this piece of it.
Is there anybody in the audience that would like to address us on this amendment?
Madam Chair, members, my name is Buzz Anderson. I'm President
Mr.
of Minnesota
Retailers.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
So
my name is Buzz Anderson, Chairman of the Minnesota Retailers Association, here today to speak against the bill on behalf of the Minnesota Retailers and a large business coalition called the Fair Information Practices Coalition. But even though we support the bill, we do support the amendment offered by Senator Scheid for a number of reasons. One is offering an alternative to a call center back in the United States. I mean, there's a big debate about whether or not it's technologically feasible. Whether it is or not, it's certainly a lot more expensive. So there's an expense question involved. In addition to that, Madam Chair, I think you pointed out that if we're a U.S. company and we have a call center in another country, we're still subject to the laws of the United States, whether we contract with anybody else or not. So we are subject to all the laws of the United States, and it doesn't matter whether we have a call center in another country or not. We're still subject to that and the penalties under federal law. So we would strongly support the amendment and hope that the committee would be willing to adopt that. And I say with all due respect to my friend Senator Sparks.
Senator Sparks.
Madam Chair, I think Mr. Loveson would like to keep the language, but obviously I'd like to keep the bill moving. I understand what Senator Scheid's concerns are, and I'll leave it up to the will of the committee.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I know I'm going outside of my realm here in terms of my level of expertise in this area, but I think that we're not necessarily addressing the concern if we just say that companies within this country are subject to laws in this country, because we can't go to a foreign country when there's been an identity theft and enforce our laws in that country. We might be able to take some action against a country within or a company within our boundaries, but when they're subcontracting with companies in foreign countries, I'm sure that we don't have the same level of control that we do over when that information is provided within the boundaries of our country. And if we were going to consider adopting your amendment, or actually even if we don't, I'm thinking that I would like to offer an amendment, depending on how Senator Sparks feels about this, that changes that has a right to know language upon request to something that would say that a customer shall be told the identification. If we do that right off the bat, we're eliminating the concern that you expressed that someone's going to be perhaps engaging in bias or discrimination based on the accent they hear over the phone. We're just right up front telling them where the call is coming from. And again, now, here I'm going a little beyond my area of expertise, but if it is true that there is a lower level of protection for that information, because it's being given to someone overseas, then I think that in addition to telling them where the call is coming from, that when the call comes from an overseas call center, that the customer should be told that it isn't, they're not sub, it's not subject to our laws or necessarily subject to our laws.
Madam Chair.
Senator Shire.
Madam Chair, even though I know Senator Olson is talking about an idea she has for the paragraph ahead of it, I would say, first of all, I think most of these calls have to do with the customer calling the company. I understand that calls are made in reverse, but I think most of these have to do with a customer-initiated phone call. I don't know that the technology is there to show the foreign in the foreign location where the call is coming from. I suspect it certainly doesn't say Minnesota. You know, it may have my phone number. It may not. I don't think that, you know, I don't know what kind of a caller identification system people have. Well, I think it would be really hard because I don't know of other states that are doing this. This is about Minnesota. And I likewise don't like the idea of setting ourselves apart in this way. But I would just like members to deal with the amendment that I've offered here. I don't know if there's anybody else that wishes to speak to that, Madam Chair, but I know we do need to keep moving. We do have some other things, and I appreciate Senator Sparks leaving it to the committee. It looks like Mr. Kozak might.
Oh, Mr. Kozak.
Madam Chair, just very quickly, my name is Andrew Kozak, and I also represent the Fair Information Practices Coalition. Just to clarify, and I think, Senator, after I got up, Senator Scheid mentioned it, most of the concern here, most of the people that are concerned about this bill, the concern is not outbound calls from a call center to your house. The concern really are the inbound calls that a customer has a problem with one of our companies, and they call in when they lost their card or they want to pay their bill or something like that. So usually we're talking about customer-initiated calls. If there's a call center in India or Canada, the company that's the United States that has that call center, they are responsible for any actions or that are taken by those foreign call centers. They, whether they're subcontracts, agents, the responsible party is the United States company. And if there is a place, theoretically, to re-refer a call back, the state of Minnesota has all the long-arm power that it needs because, by definition, there's a United States entity involved. And they are responsible for these, and I think everyone, most people, whether it's a credit card company or a bank, if there's been an identity fraud, the responsible party to repay is the American company. And there's never been a showing, as far as we know, that there are any higher incidence of identity thefts in these foreign call centers than there are in the domestic call centers. So in that sense, Madam Chair, we think that the concern about identity theft is really not what this bill is about. And this bill certainly is not going to correct that problem.
Any further questions or comments about the motion? Well, then on Senator Scheid's motion that the A2 amendment be adopted, all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
The chair is in doubt. By a show of hands, all those in favor, please signify by raising your hand. Opposed?
It fails.
The motion fails.
Did?
So it 4-4.
He didn't vote.
I didn't vote.
No.
1, 2, 3.
Senator
Sparks.
Sparks.
It's Sparks.
Oh.
It's been a rough day, Senator Johnson.
So then, is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify concerning the bill? Mr. Anderson. Yeah.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Buzz Anderson, President of the Minnesota Retailers Association, and I I want to thank the chair and committee for their indulgence, and also want to thank Senator Sparks. Although we disagree on this issue, he's been very open to hearing our concerns, and I want to say that publicly. Madam Chair, members, Minnesota has been on the cutting edge of international trade ever since Senator Scheid and I got into the House and served under Governor Perpich, who really began this effort. And every governor since then has initiated efforts into foreign countries in order to broaden Minnesota's ability to participate in the international marketplace. Every governor, I think, including this one, who has a trip planned to India this fall, is still trying to do that. Now, my point is, and I guess the reason that we oppose the bill is that I think the bill ignores the reality of what happens, what the reality is for businesses in today's marketplace. For example, I know of a company here in Minnesota that handles 45 million calls a year out of their center in Minneapolis. They also have call centers in other states in this country. They also have call centers in other parts of the world. Part of the reason for that is they're an international company, and they make a decision on where to put their call centers based on all kinds of things, the type of expertise that is available, the availability of technology, time zone differences, access to growing markets, and sometimes they just use foreign call centers to supplement the call center they have here. So you may have a call center here and still supplement it with a call center overseas. I think it's also true that the bill does create some unintended consequences. For example, although I'm not a lawyer, I do know that there's some ambiguities as this as it relates to the penalty section. It talks about a person who commits fraud. Who is the person who commits the fraud? Is it the person on the other end? Is it the person who owns the company and contracts with the phone company? Is it the company that has been hired to contract with that company to run the call center? On the other hand, what is fraud? What do we mean by fraud, and how is it defined in here? It isn't. So, again, I think that's an unintended consequence. There's also an additional fact that I think Senator Scheid said this. I think if you have call centers in Minnesota, and certainly there are, the more requirements and more the more obstacles that you put in the way of a call center here only discourages them from growing their business here. And anybody that might even consider having a call center here is more discouraged from moving one here. So I think you do have the possibility of potentially costing jobs in Minnesota if you pass this bill. In addition to that, I'm told by the International Technology Association, referred to as the ITT in Washington, that the IT industry in Minnesota is one of the strongest in the world. In fact, the call center industry is really growing in this country, unlike automobiles or textiles, which are running a huge trade deficit. I'm also being told that by the ITAA that you have a potential problem by passing a law like this in Minnesota, and the fact that it could be challenged as being unconstitutional because it infringes upon the federal government's power to regulate commerce. In addition to that, I've also been told that well, let me just say from a personal standpoint first that as one who represents the retail industry in this free market, one of the things I really like about the people I represent is we have to constantly try to prove ourselves to our customers. And if customers don't like what they do, they take their pocketbook and they vote at some other store. So if we run call centers in other countries, that reflects who we are. It's a reflection of our brand. We're not in the position of wanting to make our customers angry because they'll go vote someplace else. So we're very careful about how we operate call centers so as to make sure that we please our customers. And if customers don't like what we do, we're in trouble. So what I'm saying is the marketplace does a pretty good job of actually regulating this. There's also evidence to demonstrate that calls outside the United States are no less safe than calls made in the United States. And I think there's a lot of evidence to prove that. As was said earlier, it's also very important to note that companies that operate call centers, whether they're here or in foreign countries or whether they contract, are subject to all the laws and requirements and potential prosecution because they are a U.S.-based company. Lastly, I would tell you this, and that is that this, according to the ITA, this bill has been introduced in a number of states, and it has not passed any state yet. So I can support and remember that. And somebody just handed me a note that says about half of Minnesota's current manufacturer exports in the computer industry go to India. And so there's a large benefit to Minnesota for us to be able to ship our products to India. Do we really want to send a signal to them that we don't want to reciprocate or we really want to interfere with trade? With that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions. And I know there are some of the people that want to see a comment or two.
Any questions from members? Are there? Is there someone else who would like to speak?
Be nice.
Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak, Senator Gerlach?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if there was anybody else.
I don't see anybody. I'm sorry.
Okay. Madam Chair, I have just a couple of questions for Senator Sparks. Senator Sparks, what about what we just heard about the fraud portion? Who is subject to the fraud? Is it the person who is on the other end of the phone? Is it the call center? Is it the parent company? Who is subject to the fraud?
Senator Sparks.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Leveson.
I believe the fraud portion was taken out of the bill. So basically what would have to happen is the person would have to complain either to a county attorney or the attorney general of the state, and they would probably go to the parent company and say, we got a problem. We've really tried to make this bill kind of a consumer awareness bill. You know, we've heard all this that it was interesting. I remember in the House last time it was going to be the end of the European Union if we pass this bill. I didn't know we had that much power and that the whole state of Minnesota was going to go, you know, down if we pass this bill. All this bill does is tells, sure. It says that the consumer asks a question and gets a straight answer. And then if they feel uncomfortable with who they're working with, they can ask to come back to the United States if it's available, or a website if it's available. If it's not available, they have to deal with that company. I don't see what the big problem is, and the consumer has to initiate everything. The company doesn't have to do anything. So I don't really see where this is a major problem at all. And that's really the way we see it. And hopefully what we got told is that the businesses would be up front and say where they're at.
Madam Chair?
I'm still doing my...
So what the language is in here, Mr. Leveson, I'm saying it is a fraud, but it's under the Consumer Fraud mm-hmm. Statute, Chapter 325. So the Attorney General...
Right, that's what, yeah. That's
enforce this bill.
Right.
Senator Olson.
And Madam Chair, with respect to who would be prosecuted or who would be subject to this fraud provision, it very clearly states it would be a person who willfully violates the section. And that's no different than the laws we have with respect to lots of other statutes where mm-hmm. we say, and I can see counsel shaking his head, we don't identify who it might be who would violate the section under any other laws we have. We just say that if you violate it, it's whoever does it, and that's what this does.
Senator Gerlach, and then we're going to move here.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question about the Subdivision 2, Paragraph B. Senator Sparks, it says that a person on line 1.24 has the right to request an alternative option. So that doesn't necessarily obligate the call center to grant the request, does it? You're just saying that they can. It says request alternative. Even if they have that option available, it doesn't say they have to grant it. I don't quite follow that. What's the
Senator Sparks or Mr. Leveson?
Correct. We would hope that they would, you know, send them back to the United States, but if they don't, I guess they don't. You know, it's. I would think if you were running a business and you had somebody that was uncomfortable giving out personal or financial information, that you would, you know, want to work with them and bring them back to the United States. If you don't, you know, then you don't have to do it.
Senator Gerlach.
Madam Chair, I don't understand where any kind of violation could occur. You have a right to ask anything you want right now. If I call a call center and I'm talking to somebody in New Delhi or wherever, and I can say I'd like to request an alternative option or whichever, I can certainly exercise that right now, and they could under this bill here, they could just simply say no. I mean, they're under no obligation to do that. All it says is has the right to request.
Madam,
am I missing something?
No, it says on the bottom.
Mr. Leveson?
It says before is if the option is available.
Madam Chair, I think that the intent probably is that they, although it isn't very clearly specified in the way your language is written, I think the intent that they have to do this if you ask for it. But I wanted to respond also to what Senator Gerlach is saying, that another example of where fraud could occur would be if someone asked for the identity, the location of the call center, and the person doesn't give, and the person lies about where they're calling from. That would be another example of fraud.
Madam Chair, a lot of times what will happen is if you call a call center and you ask, where are you located, they'll say, for security reasons, we can't tell you. Well, then you don't know where you're talking. Well, then I guess you can make up your mind. You can hang up. But that's, I mean, we know that. We're just trying to let the consumer know who they're talking to, you know, so they can make up their own mind if they want to continue. Madam Chair, Senator Gerlach, you're absolutely right. I mean, you can ask, but currently they don't have to tell you. And that's what we're getting at, is that they would have to tell you, and then if they do have something available, that they would send you there.
I think what Senator Gerlach is saying is that this language doesn't clearly say you have to tell them. Senator Sparks, you're going to need to work on that. I don't know that we have time right here, because I'm determined we're going to finish those, you know, the liquor bill.
That's good, Madam Chair. And I think that the original bill, we did require him to come back. So this was trying to find a compromise with some of the business entities that we're working with. And we can continue to do that, certainly. I think that Senator Gerlach raises a good point.
Well, Madam Chair, let me just clarify. I don't like the bill, so I'm not telling you to go and put further restrictions in there.
I'm just saying that
it's meaningless and doesn't mean anything. I mean, this bill, we started off with a conversation about identity theft, and it was stated by a testifier that this isn't about identity theft. And I can clearly see and I agree with that. It has nothing to do with identity theft. It's not about consumer protections. Let's call it what it is, and that's okay. It's a union bill, and that's okay. You can advocate for that and say this is about jobs in America and these sorts of things. I agree with Senator Scheid. I don't think it's racist. I think there's a shade of xenophobia to it, but it's not racist. And let's just call it what it is. And I mean, let's be honest about that, and we can vote on its merits, yes or no, and that. But we've danced around all these tangential issues, and let's just call it what it is.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And Chairwoman, and I would vote for this bill if it were an outsourcing bill and were tighter, more restrictive, the way you've had it in the past. And I'm going to vote against it today. I think it's poorly crafted.
Here is the problem.
Senator Vandeveer?
As long as we're jumping in here real quick, I think the real problem here is this is one of those bills that doesn't do anything, doesn't provide any protection to the consumer, but deludes them into thinking that we have done something to make them safer. Therefore, it is a bad bill, and it should be voted down.
Senator Marty, did you?
Madam Chair, Senator Sparks, when I was reading this lines 23 to 27, when Senator Gerlach mentioned about you have the right to request this information upon reaching it, technically what this says is you only have that right if there's an alternative option available. You don't have the right to ask if it's not available. And you don't really know if it's available until you ask. I understand the intent, but I think this could use some more work in the language.
Senator Sparks. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I'm really supportive of this concept, but I also have to agree that there's some issues with the way it's worded, that there's so many loopholes in this that I think that the intent you have could be walked right through. I disagree that this is just about keeping jobs, and it doesn't have anything to do with keeping jobs in Minnesota. Honestly, just because the calls are coming from Minnesota, they only have to be anywhere in the United States. And so some of the initial things that were said by Mr. Anderson, I wasn't quite understanding, because it really isn't going to prevent job. I can't see any rationale how this is going to cause jobs to leave Minnesota, because this is only about call centers located in the United States. But I do think that it would be better to have language that would more closely restrict the or make sure that the purpose you want to see served here is served. And I also disagree with what was said by Senator Gerlach that this is not about identity theft issues, because in spite of the fact that we might be able to hold companies in this country accountable, we cannot hold subcontracting companies in other countries accountable, and they don't have to follow our same data practices and identity theft laws in those countries. And so I'm not convinced by what I was that there isn't a concern there.
This language is
Senator different. Sparks, on your motion, has a motion that Senate File 162, as amended, be recommended to pass. Are there any further discussion? Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to speak to this? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. So that brings us, Senator Sparks, to the language you were working on Senate File 1867, the silent auction bill or other fundraising kind of bill.
Have you seen it?
Senator Olson and Senator Metzen work together. I see you. And yeah. Senator Sparks, thank you, I'm sure.
Madam Chair,
Senator Sparks.
Thank you to Senator Olson and Senator Metzen.
Members will recall this has to do, and Senator Marty, this has to do with silent auctions where you might bid on a basket of wine or, you know. Yeah, and concern. So, Senator Olson, did you want to describe the A2 amendment for, is it the A2, right? Correct? Senator Olson is going to move the A2 amendment. And Senator Sparks, you have a copy?
Yes, I do, Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What this does is goes more closely back to the original language of the bill by providing that, and it's much simpler. It simply says that nonprofit organizations may auction. And we changed the word from sale to auction to make it more clear that's the type of thing that we're referencing. And we also made it clear that this has to be for charitable purposes only. We limited it to 6 occasions per year so that someone can't, under the auspices of doing this, set themselves up and somehow compete with a normal alcohol or liquor store. We included the fact that the auction had to be an on-premises auction, a live on-premises auction, because it was pointed out that there are some internet auctions and some other kinds of things that could be coming from other states and might cause this kind of thing to get more out of hand than we're envisioning. And we also included the language from the amendment that said that this cannot be auctioned to persons who not only are 21 years of age, but also anyone who's showing signs of obvious intoxication. And then we also added the clarifying statement that says that nothing in this section authorizes on-premises consumption of alcohol, so that if someone were to be selling alcohol for consumption, they would have to follow any other laws that were in place, either locally or provided, you know, pursuant to an ordinance or something like that.
Senator Olson, my question, did Ms. Schelsberg collaborate with you as well? Is she here?
Yes, she did, Madam Chair. And the one thing that we did, we also, significant thing that we removed was a licensing requirement from the bill. So just to point out that isn't here, and the rationale for that, I guess, is that it's self-defeating and probably more of a burden on local governments to have to provide a license, unless they were to charge so much that it would kind of defeat the purpose in a lot of cases.
And then, Senator Olson, that probably deals with the, well, I'm not sure it totally satisfies the insurance issue, but I think this at least allows events that are currently taking place to continue with some authority of law, and I appreciate that.
And Madam Chair, I'm assuming that those types of places if they are would want to have insurance, if they're going to be either want to have their own insurance, or a lot of times this is done in a location where they can fall within the license and the insurance of the place where it's happening. So I wouldn't expect, it doesn't require that, but that certainly is an option that isn't eliminated by this statute.
Senator Sparks, I think that they've done right by you here. I don't know. Do you have a response to
Madam
this?
Chair, no. Thank you to Senator Olson and Senator Metzen and counsel. I think that Joe Bagnoli is okay with it as well, but he can speak for himself.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Joe Bagnoli with McGrand Shea. I think it's a terrific and wonderful amendment. It gets at what we were trying to actually, or whoever was behind this was trying to actually accomplish.
Well, and Senator Metzen and Senator Olson,
thank you, Senator Olson. Yes.
Senator Johnson, did you have a question before?
I read it. It's in there the right way.
Senator Olson has moved the adoption of the A2 amendment. Is there any discussion, Senator Marty?
Madam Chair, just a question about the head notes. I think a lot of these auctions, it's donated alcohol, and we're talking about resale. Is that mattered anything?
Madam Chair, I think that's a good point, because we had the word sell in here originally, and we changed it to auction. So maybe we should change it to say auction for charitable purposes instead of resale.
Senator Marty, thank you. I think that Senator Olson is incorporating that into the head note there. Is there anybody in the audience that would care to comment on this A2 amendment? No further discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Senator Sparks moves that Senate File 1867, as amended, be recommended to pass and incorporated into Senate File 1070. Any further discussion on that? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Then, members, we have Senate File 1070 before us. It's the omnibus liquor bill that Senator Pappas is carrying. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I know Senator Pappas isn't here right now. At least I don't think she is. But I had a question about Senator Mua's provision in the bill. And
yes.
Not paying that much attention to alcohol bills post years. This one authorizes a license to a restaurant located at 378 Maria Avenue North. Is that typical for us to put a specific address in?
Senator Marty, I had the same question of Mr. Stang. And actually, it's 374-378. We had an amendment. Yes, we do that.
Madam Chair.
That. Yes, Senator Metzen.
Yeah, we have a Maria Avenue in South St. Paul, and they have a Mariah Avenue.
But yes, we have done it in other places. Yes. Well, because we're being highly specific. Their situation is unique because part of the building apparently is too close to Metro State. Too close to Metro State. And so. And I will tell you that I, since you're near the area, Senator Anderson had a bill that had to do with the fairground. She's taken out that so that the neighborhood process can work. There's some controversy about that license, but she's just allowing. What she did was actually take out some language in law that precluded any license to be near those places, but they'll still have to go through the process. She was feeling that satisfied some community concerns. So that would be the only thing I think that might concern you locally. On the motion, then, on Senator Metzen's motion, that Senate File 1070, as recommended, as amended, be recommended to pass. Any further discussion? Anybody in the audience want to speak to that? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. Members, we are done.
Got our work done. Good work.
Thank you.
Right.
That was smart.
We went out here too.